ladies and gentlemen, you are now listening to the Scare Blast podcast. And now here's your host, Lisa Burton.
Hi everybody, welcome to the Scare Blast podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Burton, and I'm here today with Josiah Jenkins, an improviser, actor, and podcaster here in the city of Chicago, or rather, in the city of LA.
Soon, yeah. Well, not yet when this comes out.
Oh, really?
We're very close.
When do you move?
November 1st.
November 1st, great.
So, yeah, I had to wait in Chicago until Scare Blast was out.
Well, good. Just to get, like, a little congratulations, because everybody is listening to it.
Yeah.
No, that's great. And Josiah and I are talking today about the 1963 movie, The Birds. This is a Hitchcock film. It's so, so good. Josiah. Let me ask you a couple questions. Do you like scary movies?
You know, I don't typically like scary movies, okay. Which is why I picked, like, a more old-school scary movie. Because yes. I was like, why not see, like, kind of where it all started and do the Hitchcock route? So sort of you have this, like, maybe more old-school artistic vision.
Yeah, yeah. And kind of a thriller.
Yeah. Like a thriller in as much as it is a horror movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Although, actually, though, I mean, this is more horror than a lot of his other movies because it's really, like, there's no mystery to solve. There's no puzzle, per se.
Yeah, it is just kind of an open-ended, like, this thing is happening. All of this shit is hitting a fan, and now what? And
yeah.
It's kind of open-ended. Yeah, we'll talk about it. So, can you, speaking of, can you summarize this movie for us?
Sure, yeah, I'll do my best. So, this is the story of a young, beautiful blonde. The end.
Yeah, as all of the Hitchcock movies.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Yeah, and so Tippi Hedren is Melanie Daniels.
Yep.
And she's sort of a society heiress of sorts, known for making trouble, and she runs into at a pet shop early in the movie our male protagonist, Mitch, and they sort of have a romance back and forth. Well, bit by bit, birds start to do stranger things. I mean, it's about an hour in the movie before a bird really does something unusual.
Yeah. So in this movie, what do you think the birds were after? Do you think they were just destroying humanity?
Yeah, I think they just turned.
Why Bodega Bay?
So, interestingly, I read a little bit up on what the inspiration for this movie was. And apparently, Alfred Hitchcock had been in Santa Cruz, and in Santa Cruz they had an incident where, like, hundreds of, I wrote down the name of the bird. They're called hundreds of sooty shearwaters,
okay.
Which are a nonviolent bird, had suddenly turned aggressive, and they were starting to attack people and things and act strangely. And no one figured out the cause. It actually took them 25 years to figure out the cause, which was that red algae was producing this poison that the birds were then drinking, and the poison caused them to sort of turn on humanity. But here I think that they're just motivated by, I think it's that idea of, like, nature. Like, if nature ever wanted to turn against us, it would take very little to overtake us.
I believe it was Algo Blooms that also inspired The Happening, because there was a thing where the algal blooms, the algae that was on the corals started producing a poison that would kill the fish around because the fish were overfeeding on the corals.
Huh.
So the algae naturally produced this poison to kill the fish. And once it did that, once it controlled the fish population, this algae mysteriously stopped producing the poison so that the fish started coming back and, like, it just kept itself in balance.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's this idea, you know, that the earth is just going to, like, it will keep itself going at whatever cost.
Yeah, and the idea maybe that the earth has its own, like, nature has its own intelligence.
Yeah.
And that the bird is, like, the release, the birds in this movie are the release valve on that.
Yeah, yeah. And specifically, I mean, there were a number of different types of birds that were in this, but the three that were really featured were, like, the seagulls, the crows, or blackbirds, and which it was made very fucking clear by that old woman that crows and blackbirds are not the same thing, so, pardon, excuse me. But those, and then the finches that came through the, those, to my eye, were, like, the three main types. For a little while, I was wondering whether or not the reason was that we were, as humans, were keeping birds in cages, because at the beginning they made that very evident.
The
keeping the birds in a cage, and when a bird gets out, like, you put it back in its gilded cage and close it. But I don't know that that was actually the reason.
And I kind of like, actually, that it's not It would be something unsatisfying if it were like, well, here's the mystery solved.
Yeah,
it turns out that the birds did this because, you know, someone had the talisman that, you know, they found in the old attic.
You know,
once that's broken, the birds will go back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like that, you know, because there is that old bird lady. And I think that restaurant scene is the best scene in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're just like, everyone's chiming in on what they think's happening. And
the action is sort of flowing from area to area of the restaurant, too, which makes it a really fluid scene to watch, even if it's in one space. And it's kind of claustrophobic, but there are still different areas where people are discussing what's happening, but it's not boring.
Yeah, because there's one guy who thinks it's the end times, but he's also a drunk, and the other woman's like quoting scripture back at him.
Also, interestingly, the drunk guy is an Irishman, so the early 1960s, like, this fucking Irish drunk dude.
But, you know, but he's somewhat sympathetic, I think, too. You know, he might be on to something.
Yeah, absolutely. It was just like a funny stereotype of, like, the drunk Irishman. Also, interestingly, the bar was also, the diner was also their, like, town hall-ish place.
Yeah. Which I was like, maybe, that's true to life, though. In these
Bodega
little beach,
Bay.
Yeah, Bodega Bay.
Yeah.
And I love, too, like, also I kept thinking about, there are all these people who are drinking so early in the day.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Which, 100% is a small town thing. I mean, thinking back to the times that I've spent in, for example, Ketchikan, Alaska, which is this tiny little resort town that on any given day you can walk into any, like, dark, damp, dimly lit bar and you've got three absolute regulars that are just sitting there at the bar that have been there for 2 hours and it's 6 o'clock in the morning. Like,
and I love it in this because you got the people drinking, you've got the woman who's afraid for her children, you've got the, you know, the waitress who's basically, like, trying to keep everything together. The bird expert who keeps wanting to tell everyone all the things about birds.
Yeah.
The sea captain. you know, there's just, like, so many great things.
Yeah, they're all just really, really good.
And then, I guess pretty much it's just sort of a sequence of bird attacks from there. I mean,
yeah, it's just a bunch of bird attacks. And
then the gas station blowing up.
Yes. Yeah. Which was a great effect.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if that is something that the birds would have wanted. Like, as I was watching, I was like, would the birds have planned that? Like, could they have predicted or somehow looked, you know?
It seems like beyond their intelligence to know to attack a guy so he'll spill gasoline so another guy smoking downstream of the gasoline would light it on fire. Like, seemed a little bit much for me.
But who knows? Maybe they were like, these stupid humans, like, they will do something dumb.
Yeah, I mean, these birds clearly, you know, they're after something.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just the destruction of humanity in this very small fishing town, because somehow that would get them something.
Yeah.
I just...
But we don't know, too. I mean, I guess that it says it started and it seems to be centralized on Bodega Bay, but it's not clear that it won't spread up the coast, you know?
Yeah, it did seem like there were... They did say there were a couple of, like, outlying communities that were also having a similar issue.
And, you know, one of the characters, because there's a moment where after Tippi Hedren is in the phone booth, and she runs back into the restaurant, and they find all the women and people hiding out in the hallway in this restaurant, and then the woman confronts her, and she's like, this all started when you came here, and she's, like, the one who's blamed, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and maybe symbolically, you know, in the same way that she's looking to destabilize the family, or to tear apart the family in terms of its emotional connections.
She's just torn apart this town, just on a greater level, just by being there and by, quote unquote, bringing the birds, if she were somehow a witch, or, like, somehow the start of all of this.
Yeah.
The thing that started it all. Yeah, that's super interesting to think about. And, like... The way that that character changes. So, like, what is the... I was thinking about it. Like, what is the takeaway from this movie? Or what is the... Because I had a difficult time... A lot of horror movies by the end of it are, like, have some kind of rule. Or some kind of, like, sort of major message that's, like, be careful. Is the takeaway here, like, nature has its own path. Nature has its own rules, and there's nothing we can really do about that.
Yeah, I think that's, as much as anything, it's like the smallness of humans.
Oh, yeah.
You know, on that level. Because, like, similarly, there is that guy at the restaurant who's like, why don't we just shoot them all? You know, it's like, yeah. You could never kill all the birds.
And maybe on the, and just taking that and also layering on the idea on the personal level that Annie has all these plans, that also makes her a really integral part of what the thought behind this film would be, the theme then, because she has all these plans and she has these things set in stone, but because of the feelings of Mitch, because of the feelings of his mother, because of Annie's interpretation of those feelings, though her plans do not go as she would have liked, and it's everything is bigger than her. So.
Yeah, and then she ends up, interestingly, she ends up dead.
Yeah.
If this whole thing is a metaphor for these relationships and things, yeah. You know, like, she ends up dead basically, like, in her last act of service to the family after she's been cut out of sort of the core of it in a way. Because she saves Kathy.
Yeah.
And then dies in that process. And maybe it's like a Great Gatsby idea here. The idea of, like, you know, you have these rich people who just sort of live their lives and they leave a swath of destruction, and maybe the birds is like the metaphor for that.
Yeah, totally.
You know, like life without consequences.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oof.
Maybe, I don't know.
Be careful how you live your lives. Nature has its own plan. Don't worry about it. So Josiah.
Yes.
If you were to rate this movie in, say, Lovebirds. So if you give it 10 Lovebirds, it's the best movie you've ever seen. You give it one Lovebird, and you didn't like it very much. How many Lovebirds would you give this movie?
So I'm going to give it 7 Lovebirds.
Okay.
But I think if I'd seen it when it came out, I would have given it 9 Lovebirds. Because there's something about the way the effects have aged that does take away a little bit of it for me.
Yeah. I get it. Interestingly, you chose 2 odd numbers, so that last Lovebird has to
It's for me. I wanted one left over for me.
No, that's great. Yeah, I think for me, this one, especially in the horror movie realm, this one is like 6 Lovebirds for me, like 6 or 7.
I would say it's a better movie than it is a horror movie.
Agreed. Yeah. Which also fits in, like, with people. This is a good spooky movie to watch in October if you don't like scary movies that much, but want a good thriller that'll give you a couple of, like, sort of jump scare things and is still a good thought piece for the season.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for the person who's already afraid of birds, this might be a well-suited one, you know?
For sure, yeah.
But I do think just if the effects were a little crisper, like, and they were just working with a much different set of limitations, you know, because to me, I was like, that's a bird puppet.
Yes.
You know, that's bird effects, like, superimposed over the screen. Yeah.
Although for that scene in the attic, they had the effect for that. They had those birds tied on to Tippi Hedren using string.
Yeah.
Like, that was clear string or something, right, that they had?
Yeah, and so she, like, would not speak to Alfred Hitchcock after that, I guess, for a long time, if at all.
They took, like, a week after that because she just couldn't deal with being on set for a week, which
I can't blame her, honestly, you know. The other thing I think is interesting is that at the end of this movie, there purposefully was no The End title card.
Yeah.
And the idea was, like, this is just going to keep happening.
Yes, which I also, because famously Alfred Hitchcock had The End at each of his films, and this one was the exception where it's just ongoing, which also is spooky in its own right, like that itself is very scary.
Yeah. You know, to me, this movie sort of reminded me of Jaws in a way.
Yeah.
Where it's that thing where it's not... I mean, it's not a horror movie in the same way that, like, Poltergeist is a horror movie.
Yeah.
You know, or a slash... You know, Halloween or what have you.
Right.
But there is something, like, sort of real-life scary about it, and I could see easily how this and Jaws both, like, made people afraid of the real-life thing that exists... Yeah. You know, that's out there. And so I think that's maybe the way in which it might be scarier than other things.
Yeah.
But,
where it's like, there's so much, I mean, there's still so much that we don't know about our world. There's still so much that we don't know about nature. And also, like, I'm never, ever going to know what you, Josiah, are ever thinking. Like, I'm never going to know that. And similarly, vice versa. Like, you're never going to be able to see the world through my eyes. And we will never be able to see the world through a bird's eyes. Like, that is just a reality, and it's kind of a scary reality. I've been listening a lot to a lot of real life crime podcasts lately.
Oh yeah,
and that's always spooky when you hear stories of like, man, that guy who slaughtered his family, he was the nicest guy up until yesterday afternoon.
And like, to me, I can remember like watching Unsolved Mysteries as a kid, and to me, the scariest ones were not the ghost things, but it was whenever they talk about a criminal on the loose, and it's like, yep, this is a guy who could show up here.
Yes, it could be the guy living next door who just moved in, who I don't know. So maybe two, part of that fear is like just the fear of the unknown, but like a common unknown, like a thing that we get very comfortable with, but you don't think hard enough about how little you know about that thing that you encounter every day.
That safe, that thing that should be just in the background, you know. And that's what, again, why I think the audio mix is interesting, because you get so much bird noise even before the birds start to do anything, you know, which I think also sells that idea, sort of underlies this, of like, it's this thing that you take for granted that's like very powerful, actually, were it to act in concert.
Totally, yeah. Really, really good. How many trivia questions did you bring?
I've got three.
Okay, here we go. Question number one. It is claimed the seagulls were fed a mixture to get them to stand around a bunch. What were they fed?
Oh, that's interesting. I have no idea, but I'm just going to think of a thing that would exist during that time. I'm going to say Good and Plenty's.
Oh, great. Get the seagulls to all eat Good and Plenty's, so they'll all just sit around. Apparently, all the birds were fed wheat and whiskey.
Oh,
so,
wow.
To get them to stand around and just like be sort of milling around enough, those and the crows. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
That is pretty cool. And that explains also why they are so calm when at the very end they're just slowly walking through them.
Yeah.
Which in some ways, again, is scarier to me than some of the other things.
Than them attacking when they're leaving. It's just like, we'll attack when we want to. Yeah. Spooky.
Okay. So we sort of touched on this earlier, but how many movies had Tippi Hedren appeared in prior to being cast in The Birds?
Zero.
You would have thought zero. However, she did have one uncredited role in the movie called The Pretty Girl.
Ooh!
So technically not her first movie, but you talked about earlier, she was cast out of a commercial for a diet soda.
Yeah.
And so...
was she the pretty girl in that uncredited...
I don't think so. I think she was a model of some kind, but I don't think she was the titular pretty girl.
Funny. All right. So we talked a little bit about how Melanie was at the bird store getting a bird, a pet bird, for her aunt. What type of bird was she there to get?
She was there to get a minor bird.
She was there to get a minor bird. Ding, 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 ding.
Pew, pew.
Yeah, and minor birds, I looked up minor birds a little bit too, and those are interesting because they come in like 7 different species of minor bird, but they're all very talkative, and they are... they've been known to be very invasive species because they are brought over as pets often, and then people will just let them go, but then they flourish and then end up taking over. They're a very aggressive type of bird, but they can mimic sounds almost, I mean, just like flawlessly, where you would not know the difference between, say, a car siren and a minor bird.
See, that's kind of awesome to me.
Yeah, it's really awesome.
And that would make them a great horror movie.
Yes, totally. Especially if they could, like, talk to each other and then coordinate. Spooky.
Yeah.
Real spooky.
Okay. Where did they film the scene where the school children are attacked by the crows?
Ooh. Gosh, I thought it was outside that schoolhouse in this place, Bodega.
So, actually, what they did is they had them run on a treadmill, and then they added in the background of Bodega Bay afterward.
Whoa!
Which I thought was pretty interesting.
I did read that Alfred Hitchcock is far more comfortable in studio than he is on location. So I thought that was interesting. So it does make sense then that...
But it's interesting, too, because it actually looks pretty... Like, that's not a part of that scene that I think looks off. Like, it looks like the kids are there.
Yeah, it does. And those kids are great little actors. They all look terrified. They're turning around and, like, swatting. I would imagine that to be pretty hard on a treadmill.
Yeah, pretty tough, I would think.
Yeah. But really great. You'll probably know this one. Who is Tippi Hedren's famous daughter?
Oh, Melanie Griffith?
Yes! Yay. Ding, 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 yes! And apparently, in a creepy move, Alfred Hitchcock gave Melanie Griffith a gift of a doll that looks just like Tippi Hedren and gave it to her in a, like, a wooden box so that the doll looked like it was in a coffin. Like, it was just like this spooky gift.
It feels very Hitchcock, though.
Yeah, it really does, yeah. He was known, I guess, for also, like, being real weird with his leading ladies. Like, just treating them oddly or feeling like a man scorned by these women who didn't pay him sexual attention.
Yeah.
Which I thought was also interesting.
Yeah, because he's so good looking, you know what?
Oh, boy. Eye roll.
If you like the Winston Churchill type.
And I do.
Well, speaking of directors, this is my final trivia question.
That's great.
Which director announced in the year 2007 that he or she was planning to remake the movie, even though it has not been put into production?
I'm going to go ahead and guess it's a he.
It is.
And perhaps Tim Burton.
Nope. I'll give you a guess. It's someone who probably everyone would hate to see.
Oh, boy. M. Night Shyamalan?
No, that's a good guess, though. Michael Bay, actually.
Oh, yeah. I would probably hate. I mean, there's an explosion, so who knows? Maybe Michael Bay could, like, really blow that shit out.
Yeah. The movie would be basically reformatted to take... It would be retitled Gas Station Explosion.
But it's all about birds, like, just coordinating this one huge fucking gas station explosion in downtown Chicago with Wacker Drive all fucked
Which
up.
Could, like, be a pretty scary movie.
All right, I have one final question.
Okay.
And this is an ambiance question because this is something I noticed in Psycho as well. And Hitchcock does these little, like, he's very minute with all of his detail in his film. And this to me was no exception. While at the piano, Mel plays a piece at the piano that has significance to this movie. Do you happen to know what piece she was playing? You probably recognized it.
I could not tell you the name of it.
It's okay, yeah. It's called I'm going to fuck this up because it's French. It's Dos Arabesque. Dos Arabesque.
Okay.
Is that how you say that? Do?
Do, I arabesque? Think, is right in French, yeah.
Arabesque, so two arabesques. Do arabesque, which arabesque is the position where you are on one foot, almost like a bird. Right?
Interesting.
So, two birds. And it was a piece by a man named Claude Debussy.
Debussy, I think.
Debussy? Great. From 1888. But I found that to be interesting. Similarly, in Psycho, there was a Beethoven piece that was on a record in Norman Bates's room that was significant to his changing into his mother. But I thought that was really neat. And just noticing that those little minute details of his movies either foreshadow what's going on or sort of add to the ambiance and the theme and everything that is happening, which I think is, like, Hitchcock really overthinks these things.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great level of detail, though, you know. And I'd much rather those directors than your Michael Bay's, perhaps. Who knows? Maybe his is... Maybe he immaculately constructs his movies, too.
Yeah, really, like, love to know what he was thinking with some of those guys.
So Optimus Prime, there's actually a theme that plays. It's very subtle when Optimus Prime...
And, like, we had... we had Shia LaBeouf, like, slide down the pole on the building at a, like, a 63-degree angle. Because 63 is the number of Transformers that there are, so we wanted to make sure... No way.
This explosion actually was meant to conjure a famous painting. It blows up in the form of Starry Night, and it's very subtle.
It was a Leonardo da Vinci early piece about the mechanics of man.
Yeah.
So it's like really important.
Yeah, really, really important stuff.
Josiah. You're about to leave for L.A., but with your remaining time, or perhaps when you get to L.A., or where can we find you online? Or
great. So people can find me on Twitter at A. Josiah Jenkins.
Okay.
If you want to find someone who has like a million Vine followers who's not me, you can find just that Josiah Jenkins on Vine. I'm not on there. Although I do get emails that are meant for him every now and then. And then listen to Remake the Podcast, which I may or may not be on by the time this airs.
Yeah.
But you can hear my voice there for at least a couple more months.
Yay! And back episodes.
We've got over 50 to choose from.
Yeah, another movie podcast. It's a great podcast.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Josiah.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah!